Welcome to Work From Your Happy Place, the podcast that equips you with the tools, know-how, and motivation to live your dreams and find your happy place. Be sure to sign up for our free weekly newsletter for a recap of the week's guests and a preview of what's in store. To sign up, simply text the word happy place with no space to 33444. Now, it's my pleasure to introduce the host of Work From Your Happy Place, Belinda Ellsworth.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Work From Your Happy Place. I'm your host, Belinda, and I'm excited about our guest today. I have Steve Colby with me, and Steve's a former CTO and CEO, now a patent attorney working with early stage startups. He likes helping people build companies and turn their ideas into reality. Welcome, Steve.
Hi, Belinda. It's really a pleasure to be here.
Yeah, I'm so excited. So I love this topic because I think that people have ideas all of the time, but actually have no idea how to turn that into a real business. I'm sure you see this all of the time.
Yeah, it's really a struggle for somebody like that. If you have an idea, and you know, it's happened to all of us, I'm sure it's happened to me, where it's like, oh, I should have done this, I could have done that, and then you see something, and really the difference is, it turns out that having the idea is like 2% of the work,
right?
Yeah, you know, starting with an idea is one thing, but you know. As you would know, being in direct sales, there's a lot more work to it than just having an idea. And when somebody hears about an idea, it's usually backed by, you know, thousands of hours of cold sweat, right? So I look at that, even though I'm a patent attorney, I look at the idea as one small grain of sand that a beautiful crystal could grow from.
Absolutely. So why don't you fill in some of the gaps of your bio and just take us down a little bit of your journey and how you got to be doing what you're doing today?
Yeah, I certainly, if you had asked me 30 years ago and told me, oh, you're going to be an attorney, I would have laughed. That was not on my radar when I was in college. I went to a really nice liberal arts school in Ohio called Oberlin College, and I was a science major. So I did math and chemistry, which was fun. Then I went to grad school at IU at Indiana in analytical chemistry, and that was great. I worked in a lab where I learned a lot of stuff. We basically had to, you know, build our own lasers. I became a reasonable machinist. I taught electronics for a few years at the graduate level. Did optics, of course, chemistry was in there, but an awful lot of building and tinkering things. And I actually had my first patents as an inventor while I was at Indiana. And that became, they got licensed and became profitable. I then went to work for a company, a chemical instrument company in New Jersey, and I was their director of new products, what you would today call a CTO. And that meant doing, you know, more and more different stuff. I love doing trade shows. If you're a salesperson, Belinda, you must appreciate the thrill you get of being on a trade show floor and walking around and not letting one person go by your booth without at least, you know, determining if the, you know, giving them an initial qualification or whatever. We would set up, you know, a 40-yard booth, and we would get our 40-foot booth, and we'd get five times the number of leads as everybody around us. People come and watch the way we worked. We had actually a system built in. That was really fun. So I really like sales. You know, in college, I did a lot of politics. So I was used to, you know, walking up to people and not being shy. And that helped me a lot. So, you know, now I had a science background and I was a product guy. I picked the products that our customers liked. I designed them, you know, did the CAD work, did the electronics, and, you know, we built them and sold them to people like HP and PerkinElmer and Varian, big companies. So that was my start. And I was married at the time, and my wife, we left New Jersey. She left her job at Bell Labs, and we moved to Silicon Valley in 1999. 97. So it's 24 years ago. And it was a great, quite a move. I continued to work for the New Jersey company, which means I commuted in the days before Zoom. That meant a lot of Continental airline miles and stuff. And after a few years of that, my wife said, you've got to get a job out here, right? You know, can't do this forever. And there was a law firm that was hiring, right? I mean, I'd considered going to business school off and on over the years, and I already had a PhD, but there was a law firm that would hire, and I interviewed at a bunch of dot-coms, and fortunately, all the ones I interviewed at probably died within the next couple of years, but the law firm, since I had a history of patents, I'd written a bunch, and I was a pretty good writer, so that combination, they hired me on the spot, and I became what's called a patent agent. That's somebody who's not an attorney, but passes a qualification and exam provided by the U.S. Patent Office. Okay. And it allows you to practice patent law. And that's a start. And you can't do other things. You can't do a trademark. You can't do a contract. But you can do patents practice in front of the patent office. And that means working with inventors and doing stuff. And I already had a handful of patents of my own at the time. And I liked it. It was a big change from doing engineering and producting, because I'm kind of the guy that likes a different project every once in a while, right? And if I have to work on the same thing for more than a year or two, it's kind of boring, right? I guess either it's really been a success or I'm going to give up, right? One way or the other. But being a patent attorney is really cool because I work with all these, now I'm working with all these startup companies. And every day it's something new. I'm going to work today on, let's see, what am I doing today? I'm going to work today on some communication technology like Zoom, okay, video technology. I'm going to work on a CRM, a company that does software for people like AT&T for the call centers.
Okay. Right?
I'm going to work on a medical technology for IVF. And that's, you know, that's the range of things I do. So back to my history. So I went to law school, a nighttime program at Santa Clara University. And that took a long time. It was, you know, long weeks because I'm working full time during the day and law school at night, 3.5 years of that. But that was a lot of fun. People now, when they ask me, do you want to be a lawyer? I say, go do something else for 5 years first. The part-time program at Santa Clara was really cool because the average age was about 10 years older than normal law school, which means you're full of people who have life experiences and they want to become. I had one friend who was he worked in the Salinas in part of California where they grow a huge amount of the country's fruits and vegetables, and he wanted to go into agriculture law. Right. His family had been growing for a couple of generations and he wanted to be an attorney in that space. And so then the best attorneys, in my personal opinion, humble opinion, are attorneys who have actually been in the industry first. Right. So I know attorneys who've been an actress. Right. And she worked in Hollywood and she had some parts and then she decided to go to law school. And now she represents, you know, people in the entertainment industry. And that's that kind of talent. That cross connection makes attorneys at least much more interesting, if not better attorneys.
I was going to say, I'm guessing it makes them better attorneys because they've actually walked in their clients' shoes
and exactly
have an understanding of what that feels like. So that's really interesting and great advice for people out there, you know, thinking about taking that path. Because a lot of people follow a law of path just thinking, oh, I'll be a lawyer. And then they get into it. And they really don't like it because they're really not passionate about whatever form of law they chose to go into. I've heard that story over and over and over. And it's because the passion's missing.
That's straight. And a good area to do if you're going to be an attorney is what you're doing. Sales is something they don't teach in law school. But the really successful attorneys, they sell. I mean, most of what they do is sell. They sell their services, their businesses. You have to go and do pitches for clients. You have to do presentations for people. you have to go into a cocktail party or, you know, into a golf club and sell yourself, right? And that ability alone makes a difference between an attorney who's going to be really successful in building a huge book of business, right, in their career, versus somebody who always ends up working for somebody else, right, and never quite is the partner that brings in, you know, is not the rainmaker that brings in all the clients. So ability to sell and pitch yourself is something they really ought to teach in law school, because that's a critical factor. So, yeah, I enjoy it. It's a lot of different things now. So I get to, you were talking about being in your client's shoes. Mm-hmm. It's so nice when you sit down with a client and they say to you, oh my gosh, this is the first time I've ever had an attorney I could talk to. And of course, there's some techie, right? That we're talking about, you know, AI robotics.
Right.
And they've always been hitting this stone wall. And all of a sudden, yeah, I got that. And then you circle back about their business plan and you show empathy, you show interest in what they're doing, right? As opposed to just being, well, what do you need to do, blah, right? That builds a relationship that's really adds a lot to the job.
Absolutely. And you know what I think? I think that sales fits into almost any career that you're going to do. I mean, like, you're selling yourself or a product or an idea or something, a system. You're selling something to almost every time you're working anything, there's some level of sales in there. So I always love teaching sales because you can apply it to not just selling a product, you can apply it to so many areas of your life. I mean, even as a parent, you're selling your kids on the reasons why they want to do things, you know, and being persuasive and giving the benefits and, you know, the whole nine yards.
That's the third leg of parenting after bribery and extortion, right? The three legs of marriage, the bribery, extortion, and sales.
That is right. So, Steve, what have you identified as a couple of your superpowers, if you will? So your skill sets that you think have really helped contribute to your overall success?
I think it's being, you know, what you said, being able to relate to the client. That's really nice. Having been in their shoes, I have been in the situation where I was the client and talking to patent attorneys, right? And trying to get the ideas across to them. And I've done companies. And so I know that where the patent portfolio fits into it and how patent strategy fits into it. And it can really be a great multiplier for the value of a company if you do it right. I mean, I've seen cases where a client of mine was up for being bought, right? And the mm-hmm. acquiring company, who I'm not going to mention, but had two different companies they were choosing between. And they bought my client because the patent portfolio was really a lot better. And in part, and my CEO, the CEO of my client was also a really nice guy. So he sold. But it was, you know, almost $400 million acquisition. So
wow.
It really can make a really big difference. Relating to the client is number one. I think in sales, it's probably for you the same way. If you can get somebody to instantly trust you and feel that they have a connection to you, then that's the best situation. And it, being an attorney, if you have a background in something other than just law and work in that area, you can really connect with people. That's a great way to do it. So that is important. The other thing that I do is I'm pretty good at listening to, so what in the practical part of my job, what I do is I sit down with somebody for maybe a couple of hours and they do a literal brain dump. They're in front of a whiteboard and they're describing their technology and their business and everything. And I'm sitting there furiously taking notes. Mm-hmm. And out of an hour and a half to 2 hour brain dump, I mean, it's pretty intense afterwards. You're kind of your head swimming because you've just been force-fed all this information that you're supposed to digest. And then you have to go and write a 30 to 40 page paper about it. So my work product is a patent application, which is about that length. And it's a technical document and it's supposed to be right. Okay. So figuring out and getting to understand the core ideas behind something. There are some areas I'm horrible at memorizing. You know, if you ask me to memorize a piece of music, I can't do that. I can't. There's some things I can't. I'm lousy at. But if I listen to a lecture, whether it's a TED talk or an inventor describing their technology to me, or a seminar of some sort, I'm pretty good at getting picking out the core, what's really important to it. Yep. And then that's what's important for focus on a patent application. And usually when I'm writing, I can fill in the details and so on. So that's the fun part. The cool is that I get to see all the new tech before it comes out. I mean,
I bet that is awesome,
before,
right?
Even the VCs, it's like, oh my gosh. I do work for one of the big VR headset makers. I won't say which one it is. But okay. It's one of the biggest, big three, right? And man, the stuff that's coming out through there is just like, it's mind-boggling. We're going to have these cool glasses in a few years where it'll be like our smartphone is worn on our head, right? And we'll be able to bring up information using our eyes and do things that we didn't even imagine. You know, just like the smartphone is taken over, there's going to be other wearables that an AR, VR stuff that you really want to, that's really going to be cool.
Wow.
I mean, your car is going to detect the ball rolling into the street before you do, right? And it's going to all of a sudden, there's going to be a big red ball, big X around this thing, and you're going to go, oh, right? The stuff is, it's going to be really cool. So I'm pretty encouraged about what's out there. Medical stuff, I do a lot of medical work. Pretty much in terms of the scope of the technology I do, it's everything but drugs. So I don't do pharma, mm-hmm. but I do medical devices, I do aircraft, I do dog collars, I do shoelaces, I do birdhouses. I've done a birdhouse. Bicycles, you know, electric bikes, right? I did work for a while for a company called IDEO, which is one of the number one design companies in the world, based in Palo Alto, California. And I did some work for their toy division. So we're talking things that got licensed by Mattel. It was pretty cool. But in the same time, you know, really high-end x-ray machines and CT scanners. So every day is at least two completely different pieces of technology. And that's really fun.
Yeah. And so do you help the regular person off the street that has an idea? I mean, like, or is it just this like big companies and high tech? And
well, I focus, this is a really important question because it really makes a big difference. A patent, you know, really when you get down to it, to get an issued patent, the first one is probably on the order of at least $25,000, right? And so I call that really expensive wallpaper if you don't have it. A patent is much more valuable if there's a business around it. In other words, the idea that, oh, I'm going to invent something and people are going to come knocking at my door and wanting to license it is kind of analogous to the sales guy going, oh, I'll be a salesperson for this. And I'll put a little sign on my mailbox and enough people will come by and I won't have to do anything else, right?
Right.
It's a very hard business model to invent things, do patents, and then get in a position where they are valuable and where you can license them. And the reasons for that is, first, you have to be before everybody else, right? So you have to be ahead by a couple of years. And then everybody else has to pick up that technology. And the technology then has to be really successful in the marketplace. So maybe 10 years after you filed your patent application, there's a chance that it could become valuable. The patent.
Right.
Patents are best about 7 to 10 years after they were filed. So if you're lucky enough to get there, then you would have to enforce it. And most big companies are going to ignore you. Enforcing a patent application is a $2 to $5 million project. The litigation is hugely expensive. There are people who will finance litigation, right? And I have I don't normally litigate very much, but I have one case that I'm working on right now that does, it has financing. But in order to get financing, the rewards of the litigation have to be in the hundreds of millions, right? They have to be really high. And so that's pretty rare. There are organizations that help inventors. The ones you see on TV don't. They're in it for the business. But I have worked with a former client of mine who was a professional inventor. Mm-hmm. And he worked in the toy industry, probably some of the toys your kids will remember. So he has a long history of inventing, and he was based out here in Silicon Valley for many years, and I worked with him. And he has an organization that's in the Midwest right now, and can I say it?
Yeah.
You want me to plug them? Yeah, it's called InventRight, and you can look them up on LinkedIn. And what you're going to see is that it's like basically a member organization where people are helping each other develop products. And every few days, you'll see another announcement of somebody who's licensed something. And they'll coach people on how to get a manufacturer in China. So again, the idea isn't necessarily enough. These are people who then have this stuff made and then go on Home Shopping Network and sell it and pitch it, or go into Walmart or into their local five and dime stores and get their own product on the shelves. That's the type of work that this organization helps with. It helps people who are that one-time inventor or an inventor that has a household product or something like that. That's the only organization. There are others out there, but that's the one that I really have seen do good things for people. And you can research them and see their history on LinkedIn.
That is awesome. Thank you for sharing that, because I'm sure our listeners here today, some are thinking, oh, well, that's not exactly, I don't fall in that category, but where would I go? And I think this is exactly what people need to take an idea to fruition. So thanks for sharing that for sure. And
people who have ideas won't have only one.
Exactly.
I mean, right? They will go, your mind will be, they'll be sitting on their front porch with a cold glass of Chardonnay in their head or beer or whatever. And they'll have, a pad in front of them, and they'll write down 10 ideas. And then figuring out which one really is going to work is the hard part.
Right. So what's one of your most outstanding accomplishments that you're super proud of?
Oh, I have three kids.
Aw.
My youngest is in second grade, and I'm really surprised she hasn't come upstairs and interrupted. She knows that she's allowed to interrupt Zoom meetings, but not podcasts.
Well, that's good but she understands the difference.
Good thing about COVID is I've gotten a huge amount of kid time that I would not have had. The law firm that I work for, Ramon Law, is a international firm. We're about 135 attorneys all over the world. I think we have 37 offices. But one of the things that really makes us different is we are a semi-virtual law firm. So while we have offices, we have many more attorneys than we do office spaces. And most of the attorneys work from home or work from a workspace of some sort. And that really makes a difference in terms of the whole cost structure of the law firm. It makes it so that most of our attorneys are people who came from big law firms and had big books of business and came here because it's a much better financial structure. So,
okay.
And that's nice. And we then, since I work for startups, we have all the corporate work, the employment attorneys, the licensing attorneys, trademark attorneys. I can get you a trust and estate attorney in the country of Colombia if you want.
Wow, that's awesome. So lots of resources as well.
Yeah, and that's really helpful for startups.
It is super helpful, absolutely. So let's talk about a challenge, maybe a fun story that you went through and then how you worked through that.
I spent too many years in grad school. you'll find, a challenge I went through. Yeah, that was it. It took me like 8 years to get my PhD. In the end, I learned a lot of stuff, though. I mean, the lab I worked for, you basically had to build everything from scratch. I mean, it was the days when we actually bought chips and built computers from scratch, wire-wrapped computers. And I remember getting our first hard drive. That was a big deal. So this is, back in the 80s. Mm-hmm. So that was something. Other big things I've overcome. I've been pretty lucky. It's been fun. Being a patent attorney, I tell people it's kind of like being a newspaper reporter. You interview somebody and you write a paper on it, or somebody who writes articles for Scientific American or something like that. That's the type of job it is. I get to deal with all these really, I have clients that are famous. I mean, that, that in technology that have won huge awards, you know, and I get to deal with these really brilliant people. It's so fun. And I get to work on their scale. Normally, when COVID's not around, I probably go to 3 or 4 technology events a week. So, you know, my sales platform normally would be going and selling and listening to an engineering talk and then talking with all the startup people there.
Got
so
it.
That's pretty cool. That's a lot of fun. Yeah.
Yeah. COVID certainly has made things different in this past year or so. But I think the one thing that I hear from almost everybody who has a family is it has given them that added family time that they wouldn't trade for anything. I mean, it's just been incredible. So
for the people who are lucky and can survive and who have jobs like mine, where it doesn't really impact, I mean, it didn't slow my work down, but you know, my older kids worked and they, you know, my daughter was laid off for quite a few months over the, you know, last year. So, but yeah, I'm it's pretty lucky. One of the things that you can do, so to be a patent agent, right, which is not being an attorney, but being that first level, what you need is a technical degree of some sort. And you that's all you need. And then you can go to the patent. There are places where you can get courses and take the agent exam and then qualify for the patent office. Another good career a lot of people do is they'll graduate from college with a technical degree and they'll go work for the patent office for 4 or 5 years. And the patent office, what used to be that they'd help put you through law school. But that gives you a really nice background. It lets you see the other side of the whole intellectual property process. And then after a few years in the patent office, they either go to law school or they go directly work for a law firm. That's a good career path. And the patent office is almost always hiring.
Oh, that's great. That's great information for those out there that are kind of thinking about that, listening to this and thinking that sounds like a pretty cool job.
Yeah, it's nice. Every day it's like, I'm trying to think of now different things. Integrated circuits chips for satellites that can withstand radiation, hydroplane boat technology, the coating on the Golden Gate Bridge is something I worked on.
Wow.
There's an anti-graffiti coating, and that's pretty cool. It's on a lot of things. Legoland, every Lego is covered with it. It keeps the sun from damaging the Legos. I've done animal stuff, dog harnessing, veterinary things. Every day there's something new that comes, which keeps it totally interesting. And then I really get involved with clients sometimes. So I just had a client that was just had a really successful Kickstarter campaign. You know, it's like I saw that yesterday and I was just so thrilled. It made me feel really, really good. So but you get a lot of rewards in this business too.
Now, do you represent or have you seen more since Kickstarter has been sort of really a strong platform for people? Have you seen more of that in the most recent years? And are more people having success with that?
People are definitely having success for it, but it doesn't do it all by itself.
Right.
You know, a good company that's going to plan a Kickstarter campaign I've seen people spend $100,000 prepping, you know, getting all the marketing out there and then putting it on Kickstarter and raising, you know, millions, right? So it's not, you can't just put something up and hope that they'll come. There has to be initial start. The technology that I just saw yesterday, the client was, it's a green screen studio, right? And this would be of interest for people who do blogs. It's basically a blow up, it's like a blow up bouncy house, but it's a green screen studio with lighting and with proper chroma key software, so you can do really high quality video. And anybody who's an influencer on, you know, who publishes a lot on TikTok or YouTube, it's called Dropkey, and it's pretty cool. You can just have your instant studio wherever you want and be doing awesome video right away. And I think they had raised almost 8 times their initial target as of yesterday.
Wow, that's incredible.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. Yeah.
And what was the name of that?
It was Dropkey.
Dropkey.
Yeah.
All right. So what does working from your happy place mean to you? It's kind of our signature question on the show.
Oh, you know, before I was a partner, my boss used to tell me that I always did my best work on vacation. And that means, I was married at the time and I would tell my wife, we could go to Maui for a week or we could go to Maui for 2 weeks and I'll work the second week. And she'd of course say, okay, right?
Good deal.
And of course, then when I worked the second week, she goes, you're working. And I said, well, that was the deal, right? but I have literally written patents on, with a laptop on a beach, sitting on the beach in Maui. I have done it in Tuscany on a balcony covered with bougainvillea over, staring at Lake Garda. I have done it on the steps of the European Parliament building, on trains, traveling across Europe. The flexibility of being a patent attorney, I can basically work anywhere. I can have a laptop and, I control my hours. I control my workload. Patent attorneys tend to retire in their 70s because it's not like being a litigator, right? Dealing with family law or criminal law or something. It's not as, there are stresses, right? I mean, there's deadlines, but it's not as stressful a job as other types of law by far. Right. There's areas in law which people do when they're younger and they can handle the high stress environments. But patent attorneys, often they'll reduce their clients to one or two favorites and retire at 75 because they can still do all those fun things. I am mostly in the Reno Tahoe area. Right. Okay. So I can be looking out at the snow covered mountains. Or I might be in Menlo Park or San Francisco, depending on, where my clients need me to be. All it is my laptop. So that's great. And it's a happy place. Being with kids and working and having the flexibility is really nice.
Absolutely.
So, and again, Ramon Law gave me that even without COVID. So.
Oh, that's awesome. So you've already given some great advice for people wanting to take this sort of career path, but what about entrepreneurs in general? Do you have any quick words of advice that would be good for them?
Yeah, I've done multiple hour-long seminars on get entrepreneurs in general. There's pat things I could say, like, conserve your cash, getting advisors and including people who are advisors who are in what your customer space is going to be like, so they can advise you about the customers. Advisors who have walked in your shoes before, right? That give your company credibility. Advisors who are attorneys, the attorneys you pick, they all should have had a history of working with startups. Because I work in the Silicon Valley, quote unquote, startup world, where every year and a half or so, companies doing another round of funding and giving away equity, and they're hoping not to be just a run-of-the-mill business, but to be some VC's unicorn, right? That's a lot different. I have some clients that are not that type of company. I have a client that is an award-winning fashion designer, right? Mm-hmm. And she does beautiful. I have a mask. If we had video, I'd show you a beautiful embroidered mask that I have from her. And she does women's business clothing with Russian and Ukrainian embroidery on it. That's just gorgeous. And that's not a company that raises money all the time, but it's one that, plugs month by month, year by year ahead, and she grows it and builds her business. The old fashioned type of non-VC funded company. And those can be really interesting because people, they put their heart into those types of companies. More advice for entrepreneurs. Yeah. Work with people that get good set of advisors. It shouldn't cost you much if you're nice. But definitely attorneys that are familiar with the startup space is especially helpful.
I think that is such really wise advice because I consult with companies and My sweet spot is not startups. And I've learned that about myself. I can give, you know, short pieces of advice, sure. And I just most of the time do that for free. I'm like, whether I think it's a viable idea or not a viable idea, or here's the things to be looking for. But my sweet spot is taking a company from like a $5 million company to a $20 million company. And I'm so good at it. And I know how to do it. And I know what things they need to be doing. And yet I'll get talked into this startup and they don't even, you know, have 10 people on their team and they need such different things than what my expertise and wheelhouse is in. I'm really good at scaling. And so I have learned to just say, I am not your girl. Yeah, and it took a while for me as a consultant to even fully say, that's okay for me to not be everything to everybody.
No to new, even especially when it's an exciting idea. Oh, yeah. That looks cool. Yeah.
You know what? That's when it's the hardest is, gosh, this is such a cool idea. But now I just try to turn them on to somebody that I know is better at that. And that's where we all need to find sort of, that takes time, you know, in your career, but you definitely need to find that, what your strengths are and really sort of work toward those. But for a person out there, if they're really needing that help and advice as a startup, then they definitely need to find people where that's their wheelhouse.
Yeah. Yeah. That's
absolutely. Yeah. Well, this has been a great conversation today. Thank you so much, Stephen. I've enjoyed it immensely, and I'm sure our listeners did as well. So thank you for being our guest today.
Yeah. Thank you very much, Lynn.
And to all of our listeners out there, thanks for joining us today. Don't forget to hit that subscribe button so you don't miss a single exciting episode. And of course, share us with your friends, because that's how we grow and that's how more people learn about all of these great business entrepreneurs, as well as artists that we have on our show. So once again, we'll see you next time on Work From Your Happy Place.
Thanks for joining us at Work From Your Happy Place. If you like what you hear, please share it with your friends and be sure to rate and review us on iTunes or Stitcher. For a free gift on finding your own happy place, please visit workfromyourhappyplace.com and click on the free audio button. Thanks again for listening.